We're talking property, all aspects of it, buying it, selling it, renting it, doing that from overseas, doing it from inside the UK. There's a decent amount you need to be aware of from a tax perspective.
Welcome to the Tax Compass podcast, navigating UK tax for expats with LSR partners.
So on this podcast, we're going to talk about property. Property tax, there are lots of different elements to it, but it's become really front and center over the course of the last few months. I think, one, the budget in October, there was sort of a bit of a frenzy leading up to it, wasn't there?
Yes.
Because there was lots of speculation that because capital gains tax was one of the taxes that she could change, that maybe property rates would get hammered. As it turns out, that didn't happen, and they just adjusted sort of non-property capital gains to the property rates. But, like, I mean, it's worth... I got a house in the market. I had a rental property, and leading up to the budget, I was in a bit of a panic about it. So you can sort of see where that side of it came from a tax perspective. And then just this morning, in fact, there was an announcement that the government's pressing ahead with requiring all rental properties to be energy efficiency C rated by 2030. And there are estimates that this is going to cost billions of pounds for people who are renting properties to remediate for, you know, drafts and goodness knows what else. So I think it's quite timely from that perspective. So maybe what we'll do is we'll start by talking a little bit about how property is treated on sale. So I think there are two elements around, you know, some of the reliefs and all that side, which we'll come on to. And then there's also the thing, of course, that people do keep property and there is still a rental stock. And with the increasing flow of people leaving the UK, and like I don't know how many departure briefings you've done in the last sort of couple of months of people who are upping sticks, but some of them are keeping their properties. And there's things people need to be aware of as to what you need to do if you're going to go overseas and rent your property out in the UK. So coming back to the most sort of, as I say, on point piece at the moment, which is sales. Do you just want to talk, Laura, a bit about selling property in the UK from a tax perspective, both from a resident and a non-resident perspective? Maybe we start with residents, as that's relatively straightforward.
If you are selling a property as a UK resident and you are creating a capital gains tax liability, then you have to report the capital gains and the disposal of the property within 60 days of the completion of conveyancing. So you have to file a capital gains tax on property return. And there's a hard deadline on that. If you miss the deadline, you're going to get...
And if you're selling a house, which is just like, this is my home, it's a two-bed semi, I've always lived in it, do I still need to file a return?
No, because in the UK, we have something called principal private residence relief. So effectively, if you are selling a property and you have lived in the property as your main residence for the whole period of ownership, and, you know, as you say, two bed up and down, whatever, then there would not be a capital gains tax liability arising as a result of it. And therefore, you don't need to report it to HMRC.
So the key thing there is, if you have a capital gains tax liability, and obviously it's your responsibility to figure out whether you've got a capital gains tax liability, but if you don't have one, then you don't have to do anything.
Exactly, yes.
And does that apply to any property that you live in as your home? As in, you know, I've got a field. Does that make a difference?
So yes. If you've got, is it more than about a hectare?
My field.
No, as in like the amount that you can
I think
have.
It's half a hectare, isn't
half
it?
Half a hectare. Okay, well, if it's more than about half a hectare, then there could be some...
Which I think in old money is about 2 acres, I think, but I'm not sure. I'm not very good on acres and hectares.
I think we might need to do a bit of research and just clarify that one. But yeah, if you do have a significant amount of land or farming land or anything like that, then there is some capital gains tax liability associated with that. Similarly, if you have potentially been using part of your home for business purposes, or if you have part of the property that isn't a residential section of the property, then all of that can kind of lead to capital gains tax considerations that maybe need looking at as part of the sale.
And that would presumably apply as well if I'm in the UK, so I'm a UK resident, and I'm selling a house outside the UK.
Yes. So if you are a UK resident and selling a home outside of the UK, I mean, I suppose it depends what your situation is. For example, you may have been somebody who's just maybe moved into the UK. We have people who move into the UK. HMRC have a window at the end of your period of ownership, which is the final 9 months, where you are deemed to
be living in it.
Because they appreciate that, for example, you may get a job opportunity, you may have to relocate prior to being able to physically sell the property. So they give you a little window. So we do sometimes get people who will arrive in the UK from outside of the UK and they are selling their main home and it's within that 9 month window. So there's no capital gains tax considerations. Similarly, we have people who have holiday homes outside of the UK. If they are selling the property and it's never been used as the main residence, capital gains tax implications. But in terms of the reporting side of things, you don't have to, it's only UK land and property that you have to report.
Real time.
Yeah. At this precise moment in time anyway.
And that's interesting, isn't it? Because we actually had a client about a year ago who was moving from the US to the UK, was selling a property within that 9 month window.
Yes.
And to the point around if you've got a field, if I recall correctly, it was quite interesting because he had a big property somewhere up in Washington State, I think it was. And what was interesting there was that he actually had about 4 acres of land. So he was over the limit.
Yes.
And he had a road running through, dividing his land into two different chunks. And he asked us to do some work on whether that would be viewed as a contiguous property. And there's I'm a tax consultant, but there's actually some interesting case law on situations where this has been challenged by HMRC. There was an interesting one. Somewhere down in the southeast of England, someone had 3 acres or whatever, and they successfully argued with HMRC that actually a property of that nature needed that amount of land, and actually they were fine. But it's quite interesting, and we've had more and more questions around that, and when people are selling big properties, it is something that people need to be aware of, because otherwise they can get caught out.
Most definitely. I suppose in terms of what you were saying about the larger areas of land, if it's more than that kind of basic amount, there are reasons by which you can still kind of potentially look at claiming PPR.
Yeah.
But as you say, you have to consider whether that principal private residence relief is available to you or not. You can't just make the assumption that it is because I suppose, especially when you're selling land with property with that much land, it's the sort of thing that's going to get HMRC's attention. And, you know, if you just hope you're going to bury your head in the sand and assume that they'll allow it, chances are they'll come a knocking on your door at some point.
Yeah. And so that covers off on residents selling property.
Yep.
If I'm a non-resident and I've got a UK property, what are the implications for me there?
So when you're a UK non-resident as a starting point, the only thing that you're going to be subject to capital gains tax is on the disposal of UK land and property, whether that's direct or indirect. And I think realistically...
And what do you mean there by direct or indirect?
So in terms of direct, we're looking at, you know, I'm an individual. I own a property directly, it's held in my name. When I sell it, I'm realising a gain. The indirect disposal is I own shares in a company, and that company is a property-rich company. It derives the majority of its value or its income from UK land and property. And so if I was to sell the shares in that company rather than the property itself, then that's going to be an indirect disposal.
Okay.
It also applies if it's residential or non-residential land and property as well. So everything's kind of caught within the scope. The scenario that we tend to come across the most frequently is the direct disposal of residential land and property. And realistically, that's probably what we're going to talk about rather than going into the nuances of non-residential and indirect disposals. So the rules in terms of the direct disposals of land and property came in April 2015.
And so before that, you didn't, if you were non-resident, you just weren't subject to capital gains tax on UK land and property, right?
Yep, subject to these anti-avoidance rules that have been in place for a while, but yes. So... I suppose the kind of the main additional reliefs that are available for non-residents is if you've owned your property since before April 2015. So there are different ways of calculating the base value of your property for working out your gain. And you've got basically you've got three ways of working out the gain, and you can pick the most tax advantageous way of doing it in order to
Which sometimes worries clients, doesn't it? Because they're like, why are HMRC giving me the best outcome? It's wrong here in that sense. But, you know, you've got to take your wins when you can find them.
Yes, exactly. And actually, HMRC's starting approach, if you have owned your property since April 2015, their starting approach is that you rebase it.
Yeah, that is the standard.
That is what they expect you to do. You then have an approach which is known as straight line time apportionment. So you work your gain out over the whole period.
And apportion it. So the bit since April 15th.
Yeah. And then what you can also do is you can do a whole gain, whole loss approach as well, where you...
You do it as if you were a resident.
Exactly. And I mean, realistically, the people who will take that approach is, it, I suppose, if you're realising a loss, then people will want to maximise their loss. Or alternatively, we occasionally get it in some instances where people are going to be temporary non-resident and fall back within the scope of UK taxation. So they might find that actually being taxed on the whole amount while their UK sources of income are really low means they may be paying at 18% instead of 24%.
And then sometimes we've actually had, clients often say, well, obviously rebasing is going to be the right way of doing this. And it's like, not always, because sometimes because of the way that you apply principal private residence relief, it can actually mean that one of the other methods can work.
Yes, exactly. And I think in terms of principal private residence relief, if you are non-resident, there are considerations associated with whether you can actually claim principal private residence as a non-resident. And HMRC's general principle, and it works the same way if you're a UK resident with property outside of the UK, is that you can only really claim principal private residence relief if you've lived, say it's jointly owned by you and a spouse, then between the two of you, you need to have spent at least 90 days in the property.
In any given tax year.
And it has to be 90 different days. So you couldn't kind of go, well, we've both spent 45 days there. So between us, we've got 90 days. Yeah. You've got to make sure that you are doing the 90 days between you. But again, like, for example, you know, you could spend 45 days, your wife could spend another 45 days. And
it can work.
Yeah.
But let's just dig down into that, because we've had a couple of interesting situations where people have been testing the allowable absence rules.
Yes.
Do you just want to run through the way those work?
So there are various deemed periods where you can apply principal private residence relief. In terms of that, there are things like if you can have it up to 3 years for any reason. So if you've had to, I don't know, move out of the property for a short period and then you've moved back, you can have up to 4 years for absence as a result of working in the somewhere in the UK and needing to relocate for work purposes. There's also, if you can have any period of absence if you've had to relocate for work, but it's internationally.
And that's a really interesting one, right? Because
we
actually had a case of a lady who had gone, I want to say at the end of the 90s, to South America, and she worked for various charitable organisations. I think some of them were like, you know, intergovernmental agencies, and had been going around. I think she'd been in Peru, in Chile, really interesting, and finally ended up in Honduras, I think it was. And in fact, because she was going to come back to the UK and live in the property, and she'd only ever been outside because of work, or I think there's another one, isn't there, where you're the partner of a person who's got to be outside the UK for work.
Yes.
And she was actually in a situation of being able to claim an allowable absence for a period of 20 odd years.
Yes, but in her instance, she had moved back into the country. She was a UK tax resident at the time.
And that's very important, right? So you have to have moved back into the property.
Yeah.
And it can be a real problem. I was speaking to someone recently who had retired and wondered if, you know, he'd retired a year ago and had stayed in the country where he was, and could he come back? And then it becomes very difficult. Whereas this lady had come straight back to the UK and moved straight back into the property as soon as she was able to. And I guess the other interesting thing about that one was, quite often people say to us, okay, well, I'm moving back into the property. How long do I have to move back into it for? And so again, there's some interesting case law on this, isn't there, about what they call the quality of occupation?
Yes. Oh, gosh, yes. So it is really difficult because there is no prescription about how long you need to have spent in the property. It is about whether you are using the property as your home. You know, if it's all well and good saying, oh, well, it's my home and my post gets delivered here and this, that and the other. But if the reality is you're not living there, it's not your home. And it's, I suppose, if HMRC were to ever come and inquire into the situation, then it very much falls on you to be able to provide the evidence that it was used as your home and was set up as your home. But yeah, it's really not very clear in terms of whether HMRC consider or kind of how long you have to be there.
It's one of those things, it's that expression that it's required but not sufficient, where you have to move back into it, but it's not just a question of like, I've been in there for two nights, right, we're off.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things, isn't it, where on the face of it, you'd expect if you move back into it for 2 years, that's going to give you a better argument with HMRC than if you move back into it for 3 months. But at the same time, if you move in for 3 months and you literally have nowhere else you could live, then under the rules, that quality of occupation for that period should actually work.
Yes, yes. The other thing we also get in terms of you said about people wanting to move back into their property and, oh, well, if I do that, I can just wipe all my, you know, all my capital gains off. Obviously, it depends what you've been doing during your period out away, because a lot of people will, you know, not necessarily be working. You know, I've just gone and lived the life. Now I want to come back and just wipe.
Well, and this is where this chap who'd retired actually wasn't able to take advantage of it. Because it's like, The whole allowable absence for work for any period is you, like when I went to Japan, it's like if I'd have gone to Japan and then come straight back and moved into the house, that would have been sort of a cast iron case of I was only in Japan for work. But then when you get into the whole, oh no, and then I went somewhere else and then I spent 2 years, you know, tootling around and not working, whatever, it becomes more problematic. As I'm finding out with selling that house at the moment and looking down the barrel of slightly unpleasant capital gains results. I need to get the rule books out, I think, and see if I can do some more work. Okay, so we've covered sales. Not everyone's selling their properties. And there are lots of people at the moment who are leaving the UK for various reasons. It's amazing, isn't it? We're seeing a huge number of people moving to the Middle East. That's been a real growth area in the last 6 months. And one of the things I guess is quite interesting with the Middle East is that on the face of it, it looks really nice. I was speaking to a friend who was considering doing it recently, and he took his family over there and he was like, it was great for the first few days, but then he realized just how hot it was because they went in the summer. And they decided actually they wouldn't be able to cope with living with two young children in that heat. But horses for courses. It's better than piddling rain, I suppose. But a lot of people go and they think, right, I'm really going to give it a go. And obviously that means that quite often they'll say, I've got a UK property, I'm going to keep it so that I've got a base if it doesn't work out and come back. Let's talk a bit about the practical things that you need to think about if you're going overseas and you want to rent out your property.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you are moving overseas and renting out your property, the starting point is you're highly likely to become a non-resident landlord. You usually have to be out for 6 months of the year to qualify as a non-resident landlord. And you don't actually have to be non-resident in order to qualify as a non-resident landlord. If you are a non-resident landlord, HMRC accept that it's quite difficult to claim money from you and maybe make sure that you're doing your taxes. So the general guidance is that if you're a non-resident landlord,
and this is factually non-resident landlord, not part of the scheme that you're going to come and talk about.
Yeah.
So you are just non-resident and you're renting out a property.
Exactly. Then assuming you're using a letting agent, they should be withholding 20% tax on whatever the profits per their records are. If you are letting directly to a tenant, technically the tenant should be withholding that 20% tax at source and paying it over to HMRC quarterly as well. I would imagine.
And I reckon there's probably zero situations where that's actually happening. Yes. But that is what the rules say, right?
Yes, exactly. So and there are some non-resident landlords who maybe do it professionally, maybe have large amounts of significant amounts of investment property to go, actually, yeah, I'll take that 20% hit and not,
because it's actually better.
And be done with it. But in a lot of instances, like you've described, in terms of people who are just leaving and just wanting to rent out their property for a period of time, For those individuals, quite often they are British nationals, they've settled in the UK, and they're eligible for a personal allowance as a non-resident, which not everybody is, but in a large number of instances, they're eligible for a personal allowance. So they want to rent out the property, and they're having this 20% tax withheld at source. What you can do is you can register on what's called the non-resident landlord scheme with HMRC to tell them that, yeah, I'm letting you know I'm a non-resident landlord. I'm going to do my tax returns on an annual basis. I'm going to keep my records up to date. Can you please, like, give me my cash flow advantage and give me, like, let me be paid without having the taxes withheld at source.
And it's good because if they are withheld at source, but you have a personal allowance, you don't have to faff around doing a tax return to get the money back.
Exactly. So, I mean, the only real benefit of being on that non-resident landlord being registered as a non-resident landlord is a cash flow perspective, and you get paid the 20% back.
Because you still have to do a tax return.
Because you still have to do the tax return. So, I suppose in terms of things that we tend to come across from people who are going abroad and being non-resident landlords, you sometimes get the people who go, oh yes, you know, we jointly own this property, but because I already filed tax returns, I'm going to declare all the income and my partner is not, because they're not registered. And well, from HMRC's perspective, if you're married and you're renting out a property, then that income or the rental profits are automatically 50-50, unless you've told them otherwise.
And you filled out a form.
Yes.
HMRC love a good form, don't they?
They do love a good form. But yeah, so that I think we tend to come across that in terms of misconceptions. We get people who go, oh, well, I'm paying tax in the country I've gone to live in, and so I don't need to report it to HMRC. If you've got a UK property, you need to report it to HMRC.
In all situations, right?
Yeah. And what else do we have? There was another instance that I was thinking of. I don't have to pay any tax, so I don't have to report it again.
Yeah, and that's a weird one, right? Because in a lot of situations, like we were talking about, if you sell a house, but you know you've got PPR relief that shields any gain, you don't have to do a capital gains tax return. But if you're renting out a property from overseas and you're registered, you always have to fill out a tax return.
Yes.
But if you're not registered and you're having 20% withheld at source, you don't have to fill out a tax return. So, I mean, it's as clear as mud as so often these things are.
And actually, just one point to just go slightly back on, but in terms of the selling a property and if it's covered entirely by PPR, if you sell it whilst you're a UK resident, no capital gains tax to pay, so no need to report. But if you're a UK tax non-resident,
yeah, you do.
Even if it's entirely covered by PPR, you have to then report and pay capital gains. You have to report it.
But it's good they're so consistent with all this stuff, isn't it?
It makes it really, really easy for people to understand what their obligations are.
Exactly. But I suppose if it was easy, we'd be out of a job, so it's probably quite good. And it's interesting, isn't it, because I guess the final piece on this whole thing is, as I think you've highlighted well there, it's all over the place in terms of who has to do what, which form has to be filled out, when do you have tax deducted, when don't you have tax deducted, what are my obligations? It's probably an area where we see, again, a significant amount of people saying, oh, I've got a rental property in the US, I've been living in the UK for 20 years, I've never disclosed it. We had a poor client actually came in to see us because someone had pointed out that she'd got a US rental property and she'd been in the UK for 20 years, hadn't disclosed any of it. It's one of those things equally, though, I think, where HMRC are actually aware of the fact that people don't understand this space very well. They don't understand that if they're a UK resident and they're renting a foreign property, that's taxable in the UK. We recently had a client, didn't we, with a holiday home in Portugal, had an investigation from HMRC because they weren't paying tax. And they also run a scheme called the Let Property Campaign, don't they? Which is at least one way in which if people are behind on this stuff, they're pretty favourable. Do you just want to give us a flavour of how that works?
So in terms of like the Let Property Campaign, basically you can make voluntary disclosures to HMRC. You can hold your hands up and tell them. And as long as you're kind of being the one who's telling HMRC about it, then you're likely to be treated a lot more favourably.
We did one last year, didn't we? And it was an Irish resident who had six properties, I think, in the UK that were being rented out. And we did a big disclosure back to 2006, I want to say. And we actually submitted that with no penalties, and they accepted it, didn't they? Whereas, to your point, when it's some of these other areas, like the pensions thing, they're like, no, there's got to be penalties. But I guess the takeaway is that for people who've got UK property that's being rented, make sure you're getting tax returns done. Make sure you're registered as a non-resident landlord, generally speaking.
Yes.
As you say, there are always times when that doesn't necessarily make sense. And then as overseas, make sure you get capital gains tax returns, all that sort of thing, done on a timely basis.
And I think as well, it's worth pointing out just briefly that HMRC did go through a spell, possibly about 15 years ago now, but they, or 20 years ago, they went through a spell where they tried to discourage non-resident landlords from filing returns and entering the tax self-assessment system. So if you were filing returns and you were very clearly demonstrating that you hadn't got a tax liability, they were asking people actively to stop registering. The position now is totally the opposite. And again, you sometimes get people who are in situations whereby their income's never, like, they've had, their situation's maybe changed, but they haven't realised that actually yet, but you should be now filing, and just trying to kind of get them up to date and get it all filed on, I say on time, but...
Yeah, I must admit though, from my perspective, having just sold a rental property, I'm getting out of that particular market. The idea of having to spend my time fitting insulation in the loft is not something I particularly want to be doing. So I suspect there's going to be more movement on the sale of rental properties going forward into this year, as people look at it and just go, there's just becomes too expensive. Yeah. And especially with interest rates where they are now, we're seeing people suffering with their finance costs. How long will it be before they decide that you can't have any finance costs allowable? I mean, there's just so many areas where there's movement there.
Yeah.
And for whatever reason, the government seems to be very anti-landlord, and so it's an area where I think we've definitely seen an uptick, haven't we, in non-resident and resident capital gains situations where people are just saying, I'm exiting, I've got my own home, that's fine, I'm just not going to do rental as a business.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening to the Tax Compass podcast, brought to you by LSR Partners, where we help you pay the right tax in the right place at the right time. Book a call with us. Details are in the show notes.